Yes, it is Friday, January 3rd, 2020. Happy New Year, everybody. That's right. It is 2020. Welcome to Raging Chickens, Out the Coop podcast. It is our first show of 2020. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our capital muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, 2020 presidential race heats up with the Iowa caucuses just 1 month away to the day, except it'll be a Monday. That's right. And Bernie Sanders breaks fundraising records for any presidential candidate. Check this, but it looks like in history, the Sanders campaign reported raising $34.5 million in the last months of 2019 while expanding the number of people contributing by hundreds of thousands. And Joe Biden just might bring a Republican on the ticket. Maybe? Wait, what the hell did he actually say? I'm going to make heads or tails, but it sounded like that. Oh, God. And the Trump Organization, good way to start out the new year, has killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani, who commanded Iran's elite military forces and is considered the second most powerful figure in Iran. Did that by drone strike just yesterday. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo claimed that the strike was a response to intelligence about an imminent attack. Never heard that before. And the strike further escalates tensions following 2 days of pro-Iranian protesters who stormed the U.S. Embassy on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. It was quite a hairy situation. Can anyone say Benghazi? Anyone? Benghazi? No? All right. Congress quietly removes the term white nationalist for screening military recruits. Because that'll turn out well. Brown shirts. And Australian fires rage on. I don't know if people have been watching this, but man, the images coming out of Australia are just like devastating. And new reports are showing that at least 18 people now are dead. And half a billion, that's billion with a B, half a billion animals have already been killed. Over 1,000 homes have been lost. And Australian officials say this weekend may be the worst yet for the whole southeastern Australia, as temperatures are going to peak over 100 degrees and there's going to be high winds to boot. Not good. And Michael Moore launches a podcast called Rumble, kind of like slowly rolled it out, and it headed to the top of the podcast charts in just a couple of days. It's a really good podcast. I like what he's doing with it. Got to say, interview with Robert De Niro, I loved it. Got to say, but we'll go from there. And today, a little closer for home. Get ready, everybody. That's right, the Pennsylvania Farm Show is coming up, but the most important thing is Gritty is going. That's right, the annual Pennsylvania Farm Show starts this weekend, and yesterday, Farm Show officials revealed this year's butter sculpture. It's a butter sculpture, baby, that included the Flyers mascot Gritty and mascots from the Steelers and the Pirates. Gritty is in the butter, baby. You gotta love it. Democrats in central Pennsylvania are stepping up and running for the House and Senate. And next week, Shana Danielson and from Moms Demanding Action will be hosting her launch party for a PA Senate. Shana will be channeling Senator Mike Regan in what is, oh, I'm sorry, will be challenging Senator Mike Regan in what is possibly the largest swing region in the state. The launch party will be Thursday, January 9th from 7 to 9 at Boorigs. Is that how you say that?
I guess so.
Boorig's Gathering Place in Mechanicsburg, PA. That's freaking awesome. She's amazing, right? She's amazing, and I'm so psyched for that launch. We've got some news that we'll talk about maybe in today's last call about new directions, possibilities for where we're going here in 2020 here at Out the Coop Podcast. It's pretty cool. And Raging Chicken Press. And today's last call, Amy Klobuchar wants to release classified UFO files if she elected president. Boom, I'm switching my allegiances here. But no worries. Both Bernie and Andrew Yang have also said that they're open to releasing the X-Files. Speaking of Andrew Yang, kind of muffed the whole Medicare for All question in a live interview this past weekend. I think that might be the beginning of the end for him. And in 2020, China plans on more than 40 space launches, and those launches will include lunar, interplanetary, and space infrastructure missions. That's right, like it or not, everybody, space race is here. The next space race is here. Good thing we got that budget approval for the Space Force. That's right. And Free Will's got a good, really good releases coming up. Two releases coming tomorrow. That's Saturday, January 4th. The first one, these are two debuts, is This Way to the Sorbet. It's a collection with their friends at Pottstown United Brewing Company. It's a hazy IPA. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in the last call. And they also have Vergnügen. Vergnügen, I think is how you say it. Another debut, it's a pale lager brewed with a straightforward grist of Pilsner malt and flake rice. That comes in at 4.2 ABV, so it's a kind of a more of a sessionable one. But the big news is on Monday, yes, Monday, in a special event, Free Will is going to be releasing Moosey. It's a barrel-aged saison featuring Pennsylvania native pawpaw fruit and spruce tips. And Moosey is a collaboration with the renowned chef Ari Miller and his staff from Moosey BYOB in Philly. It's going to debut on Monday, January 6th from 5 to 8 p.m. in Philly's Moosey's in famous Fritzwit cheesesteak release. There are only 143 of the 750 milliliter bottles available, but there's no limits to how many you can buy. Whatever remains from that event will go to the tap room afterwards, but I wouldn't count on there being any left, folks. So pretty cool. I want to remind everybody, tune to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune down the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure you download the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcast. If we want a progressive future, folks, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We're expanding our network as we prepare for the fight of our lives, the fight for the future in 2020. We are all in for the fight, and now we need you. We're not asking you to break the bank here, folks. We're asking you to become a member for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media and the movement, movement and the media. Become a member for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, happy new year, man. Happy new year.
Happy new year.
How's the 2020 been for you so far?
It's been treating me pretty good.
Pretty good. That's good. Same on this end. Same on this end, I got to say. Kids are back in school the past couple of days, which has been a good thing.
Wow, they went back to school yesterday?
They went back to school. Yes, they did. They were dragging like crazy.
Damn, I didn't realize like the school districts, like, you know, when I was a kid growing up, we had off that whole week, regardless of what day, like, unless like New Year's fell on like a Monday or a Tuesday, like if it was, or a Monday. I mean, like having kids go back to school on a Wednesday.
So, you know, this is probably the first time, the only time I'm ever going to be able to use this with you. But like, so this happened when you were a kid, you're saying?
So, I don't think so it
this,
ever did.
I think this would be the appropriate time I could say like, okay, boomer.
When I was growing up.
When I was growing up, things were very different. We had a whole week off. Now today, kids been run ragged by the school districts.
Every time I see like a 10-year album tour,
yeah,
it just makes me feel that much older. Yeah, and I'm starting to see like 20-year tours now. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is just like I've hit that point where it's like I've been listening to a band for 20 years. And now, like, their first hit album is, like, you know, like,
yep,
on the 20-year reunion tour.
Yep.
It's fun how that stuff works.
Yeah, you're going to start hitting radio stations and say, your favorites from the aughts.
I know, it'll be awesome. Like, once the Menzingers make it to B101.
There you go. Exactly. Your favorites from the 80s, the 90s, and the aughts. Oh, crazy, man. Well, it's been good. I had a good break. I went to see my folks up in Utica, which took the kids up there, which is good. It was a good holiday. It was a good break. I tried to stay away from a lot of the intense politics over the break, in part just because I needed a break. I think, you know, just to kind
of I don't have a functioning laptop, and so when I was home for like 10 days,
yeah.
it's amazing not having a computer with you for 10 days. I had my cell phone, but like, you're not inclined to like check your cell phone as if you're like checking a computer the whole entire time. Right. So it was good to like just do that. And then go to Forest of Maine.
So you made several pilgrimages, I take it?
Yes.
Yes. Very good. Very good. Well, man, I was like, you know, as we come back, this is our first show of the new year of 2020. I hope you enjoyed the extra content that I put out there for a couple weeks ago. I'm going to release the second one. I talked about on that podcast about releasing a second one from the archives. I'm going to do that and piggybacking on today's show, in part just because I ran out of time and there was like we're traveling and stuff and I couldn't get the it was going to be a crappy upload if I was going to do it. I didn't like what I was going to be able to do with the editing, so I decided to wait on it. So the first one was I don't know if you saw what I posted, Sean.
I did not.
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't expect you to. I mean, Sean doesn't pay attention to anything that goes on with this podcast once he leaves for the day. So he's like, you know, he comes online, right? We get ready for it, and that's when he starts paying attention. And then when we log off on the recording, that's when he stops paying attention. So that's like just to be clear. So no, but I did. It was actually a good show. It was like, I don't know if you remember this, but in 2016, that's we got to September. Right. Our September podcast. And that's right when we were ramping up to go on strike in ABSCUF. And we stopped doing shows. Right. For about 2 months. Right. And then we came back after the election. It was like I think it was the 16th or the 14th of December. And so there's this big gap. And it was our first show back after the election of Trump. It was really
happy times.
Well, that's exactly. So, but it was. I mean, it's just fascinating to hear, like, the visceral reactions that both of us were having on that, and trying to make sense of things in real time. I mean, so that was kind of a cool one. The second one that I was putting out was it's after the inauguration. It's after the massive women's march, and we're seeing the explosion of organizing, right? So that's kind of on the hopeful end of stuff, which is pretty good. So that you're going to find that as extra content in the podcast after we post this show today. And when I say we, there I mean me.
I will like say this. I mean, like, I was really surprised. I didn't go to the impeachment demonstrations, like, mainly because I was busy and feeling very apathetic and wondering like what like I was actually surprised at seeing the response and how many people showed up to that. Like, I think close to like 400 people showed up in Harrisburg, and you know, you had 1,000 like in some spots in southwestern PA and stuff like that. Like, a lot of stuff, it for the activism dying down, it seems like people are still there and still very much plugged in.
Yeah, and I agree with you, because if you remember, it's like my take on those things like ahead of him was kind of like, yeah, we'll see what happens. It seems like a kind of like, you know, whatever. But I was wrong, and I think it just showed, like, I think I hit a wall. I think at some point, like in the fall, where I was just kind of like emotionally spent. You know.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah, and just kind of like I just needed this time. And sure enough, and to see those the protests, I was shocked, right? I was shocked to see protests that were that large in so many locations, which was great. So that was good. But you know, we come back here today, and one of the things that's pretty crazy is that we are just about 1 week from about 1 month from the Iowa caucuses, which is pretty freaking amazing, if you ask me. Sean just got a package delivered to him, so he's very happy now.
What's that?
I said Sean just got a package delivered to him, so he's very happy.
Yes.
Now. I was just starting to introduce this stuff about so we're basically 1 month away to the day.
And it's not a bomb, just in case anyone's
just worried. So anybody knows, right? So 1 month away from the Iowa caucuses, and things are really starting to heat up. The fundraising stuff that came out, now Elizabeth Warren's, her campaign still has not released her final numbers. She did the same thing last time around. There's a couple days, like Bernie was like right out of the gate. Like as soon as the lockdown, they released the numbers. Amazing, right? $34.5 million in the last several months of 2019 for the last quarter.
But what about Mayor Pete?
Mayor Pete actually,
he did good fundraising wise, but 4,000 donors versus 5 million donors.
Right. There you go. Right. I mean, that's what's significant about those numbers. And, you know, I was listening to yesterday, the Majority Report was back on too as well. And they did this, the breakdown of some of that stuff, something like 99.9 or 99.5% or something like that. People who have given to the Sanders campaign can still give. Right. Whereas in the Biden campaign, and I didn't look at the stuff with Buttigieg, but, they've maxed out. Right. So you have
I wonder how many people are unique contributions, like, because I saw like a lot of people arguing, oh, well, you're just asking people to file like 10 $1 contributions to like pump up your numbers, where I don't see that to be the point. Like the point of those $1 contributions is to build your email list, which is what Trump did very effectively with his $1 campaign. Yep. Like it wasn't to like boost your fundraising emails. Like whenever I say like donate a dollar, that means you're getting on the email list.
Right.
And you're giving up your data to the campaigns. But no, I mean, like it, even like with that argument, I think it's just a very flawed argument saying, well, okay, so maybe you have like a small percentage giving like 20 or 30 times. There's still millions of individual donors out there.
Well, but this is the important thing, right? Is the important thing about,
and these are people who are signed up, most likely sign up to give $25 a month through the election.
Right. And so the important thing about that, though, the numbers with Sanders, right, is that, you know, and there was a breakdown of the different numbers about how many are kind of unique contributions, how many are unique contributors, right? Because those are really different, right? The difference between, like, if I gave like five times, that'd be five unique contributions. If I gave, but I'd be one unique contributor. Sean is opening his box right now.
So yes, that's I know. I'm very.
That's what his noise is. He's like freaking opening the box, sitting there like as if this is not even happening right now. That he's alone in his living room, fucking opening a box. Like oh, my mail just came. I just gotta open the box. Not like there's a mic or anything. Motherfucker. It's
like, I'm listening. I'm sorry.
You're listening, but you're also it's like what the hell are you doing?
Sean,
okay, Sean just got poll numbers in his box that he's right off the presses.
I just slid the box in my bedroom so I won't have to like look at I just got a camera flash in the mail.
There you go.
And I'll be using it next week, and we'll talk about that more in the next section.
Sean, I know. Hands where I can see them. Come on.
Oh, I know.
No, but, that's the difference, right, is that so in the Sanders numbers, yes, there were people that gave unique, like, donations, like people's giving several times, but there's also increased the number of people, right, the unique contributors by hundreds of thousands of people. Right. That's going to be big. And look, this is all we're all in the realm of theory at this point, because if you look, I was checking the polls this morning, and at least from the last time I checked, there has not been a new Iowa poll in 2020 so far. But the latest polls that were coming out of Iowa, there was one, if you remember, where Pete Buttigieg was kind of topping those polls. Ones that came out after that, though, had basically Biden and Sanders, and these were kind of better polls, apparently. Biden and Sanders tied for that position. So, really, it's going to depend on what's going to happen in terms of the mobilization.
So, like, the best thing I heard, like, we didn't have a podcast with the debates, but, right. Like... I didn't watch the debates, but I watched, like, the recaps of the debates.
This, I have to say, it was one of the best debates for a while. It was good.
I didn't get. Yeah, I should have watched it. But like when Sanders said the only real race that's happening up on the stage right here is the race you can get more billionaires. And you just see like, yeah, Pete, you're going to get some, you got some catching up to do with my friend Joe over here.
Right. He's like, he's kind of like, Pete, nothing to get you. I know you're a real go-getter. Right. Like, you still have time to catch up.
He managed to knock the knees out of two people at once.
Both of them were just completely flat-footed on it too. Okay.
He saw Pete like clench his fist, like motherfucker.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. So because he knows he can't go after Sanders, right? Like on those same terms, right? With those kind of shots. Right, he can go and kind of after the policy and talk about how.
Well,
he
doesn't have the attitude or the personality to be able to like pull off a shot like that.
No,
like if he it would be like a nerd, like where Sanders is like, yeah, fuck you, like a working person telling, like a nerd telling you off versus like a working class person telling you off. Like, who's gonna sound more offensive? Like.
Well, it's like you get that, even Biden, right? I mean, even Biden he tries to play the tough guy, but it's like, even though Bernie is like, you know, like he's an old guy too, right? So when it's like, you get the sense that Bernie said, Joe, right? You better watch it because I still wipe the floor with you, Joe. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, you put a big tough guy over here. Okay, come on, let's go on the playground right now, you little fuck. You
know, it's like, I knew a couple of people who worked in the Senate.
Yeah.
And like they were saying, Bernie is absolutely by far the biggest asshole they've ever had to deal with. And no, I mean, like, okay. I mean, I could work for someone like Bernie if he's like a total asshole. Like, you know what I mean? Not like abusive, but just like.
Well, it depends on what they mean by that. Right?
No, I mean, like asshole in the type of way where like he will harp on you to put your name onto an amendment. And if you don't do it, he'll just keep on bird dogging you until you do it.
That's politics. there's doing that,
and there's also like probably the conversations that he has too, I'm sure, are very illuminating.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
Like, it's not just him chasing people down. It's him chasing people down and...
But what's interesting, right? It's like, you know, how many times have I got to tell you? What are you, a fucking idiot? This is gold. But, I mean, it's like, you know... Well, we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens in the campaign. I don't want to get ahead of myself here. But, you know, it's like... there's different kinds of assholes. Let me say that. And I'm not... And I don't know the inside of those conversations. And maybe some of that stuff will come out in the campaigns. And we're going to find out more about that. But we'll see, you know, we'll see what goes on.
I don't see him being like a Senator Klobuchar throwing up.
Well, that's what I mean.
Binder at someone.
That's what I mean. It's like, there's assholes and there's assholes, right? You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's all. Oh, by the way, if you got kids listening today, you probably already pulled them away from the podcast, but, just so you know, yeah, 2020, well, the gloves are off, folks. So there's that. Everything's really heating up. I mean, I saw Bernie actually just kind of took a shot at Biden now, right? He's actually kind of like been challenging and pushing Biden, basically saying, coming out, and which I think is 100% correct. Right, basically saying like, this guy's got too much baggage. He's got too much baggage. He's tied with the old way of doing things. He's tied to the system that gave us Trump. Right. And Biden has not responded to that yet. But, you know, that's, I think, the tenor that we're going to start seeing in this next month.
And I think Buttigieg is done. I think he's peaked.
We'll see.
I think we are past peak Buttigieg at this point. Like, he.
I think his stuff. I mean, you were talking about this before. I think his stuff on slavery is just going to. I mean, he will not get the nomination.
Yeah, the stuff on slavery. I mean, like, the kids' reactions to that was the kids. I don't like. Were they all like wearing gray makeup? I mean, like, literally, like children of the corn.
Yeah.
Like, but it's that, and then I don't think he'll. I don't think he's going to rebound from the. As I said, I think the Wall Street Pete moniker is a fatal moniker for his campaign.
Okay,
like, but- that's just a meme that I mean, he's going to be doing. Like, I don't see him getting the nomination at this point, and I feel like his record is there just to be attacked.
But here's the thing. This is why
I feel like that's what we're starting to see.
But
like,
I don't
people
think,
are starting to take the gloves off with Buttigieg.
I agree, but here's the thing why I don't think he's done quite yet, right? Is because if you look at the national polls, right? The national polls still have Biden kind of with a fairly comfortable kind of margin, right? But as we know, we don't elect people nationally. If that was the case, Hillary Clinton would be president, right? She is not, right? Just to be clear, right? So you do it by the caucuses and the primaries and state by state, right? So that that right now, I think that a lot of the big donors and a lot of the people who are part of the kind of established Democratic machines are focused on those national polls. Right. And so they feel still relatively comfortable with Biden. And they say, well, you know, he's had some stumbles and things like this, but he's still up there in the polls. Iowa and New Hampshire, and I mean, especially Super Tuesday, but I think even before Super Tuesday, they're going to be, I think, the testing ground for that. And my guess is that Biden is not going to win those. Right. He's going to probably win South Carolina. Right. But he's not going to win New Hampshire and he's not going to win Iowa. Right. I'll predict that right now. And that's going to put the fear into some of those people in the Democratic establishment. And when that happens, they're going to scramble to try to find a kind of like something else to bolster, if not like someone else to kind of take over the Biden slot, someone else to bolster that position. And they're going to start throwing him some money. That's my guess, because I don't think they'll give it to Klobuchar. I don't think they'll gravitate towards her. I think they're too uneasy to go all in with Elizabeth Warren, right, as kind of the alternative to Biden. That's my thing. And I think Buttigieg is the one who is ready to soak up the money, right? So he might play the role of kind of being, you know, kind of the pit bull, right, going after Warren and Sanders, right, in order to try to clear some space from Biden and they could bring let Biden kind of stand back and do his little kind of little thing. That's the only thing that I'm saying. I don't think he'll get the nomination, but I don't think he's done yet either.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But Biden continues to stumble around. I mean, I love that little – I mean, you saw that thing about him basically, you know, people being asked, hey, would you bring a Republican on the ticket? And then he says yes. And then he says, I just don't find one. And then people laugh. And he says, no, I'm serious. And he's.
I didn't watch that whole exchange, but I was. Yeah, no. It it seemed like the Biden people were getting very angsty online about this story.
They should be.
like, I don't know how you can. I mean, this even got responses from my friends who are like trying to say off, like they're like no Republican VP 2020. Like this is not, it's a fucking softball. Like, I mean, what do you say? Like, no, but you say, no, I'm not going to pick a Republican vice president, but there are like, they have to clean up their own mess.
That would have been my response. Exactly.
Like, this is the mess of their doing. We're not like, our position as a Democratic Party is not to bail them out for their mess. Like, their mess isn't just Donald Trump. It's 40 years in the making.
Right.
It's having this ultra-conservative Supreme Court that's probably going to overturn Roe versus Wade. It's, you know, having like this. It's the corporate giveaways. You know, going back to the – literally going back to the Powell memo. This is the trajectory the Republicans have been on. And, like, you saying that you just jokingly – I don't know if he was being serious about it, but, like, just jokingly saying it, it shows you that – do you actually think that there's nothing wrong with the Republican Party when they've been nothing but a joke my whole entire life?
Right.
I mean, they've been a joke as an institution my whole life.
Right. He really still believes that there are good Republicans that are out there. And that, you know, but I mean, let's just say that he still has friends that are in the Senate. Right. The fact is that none of those people have done anything to stand up to Trump. Right. They've all fallen right in line with McConnell. They've fallen right in line with Trump's policies and things like that. So, look, you know, even if you want to say there's some good people there, they've proven that they will not do anything, that they are part of the problem. And until, exactly as you said, they clean up their own mess, not going to do that. But he's still in that mindset. And he thinks that this is just a small blip and this is an aberration and we can go back to normal. And that's the shit that scares me, right? Because I think there's a lot of people out there that's what they want to as well. And this is why I'm telling you that everything is.
And that's why Buttigieg is the normalcy candidate.
That's exactly.
I mean, I see like I actually see like people that I'm friends with, like, you know, within the legislature who are very progressive. And they're like talking like about Mayor Pete, like he's like the best thing since like sliced bread. I'm like, no, like this dude is an absolute fraud. Like, And like, yes, if you want things to be normal, this is who you support. But we're not going back to a normal time period.
No, no, no. And I think that, you know, one of the things that, yes, we're not. We're definitely not. We're not. And I think, but, you know, there's a lot of people out there that they just want normal and they don't follow politics and they just want to feel a little bit better and more comfortable again. And that will be the death knell, right? I mean, that will be going back to normal at this point is just going to be like insane. It'll be insanity. This is why everything depends. I mean, telling you, everything depends on young folks. I mean, everything I'm on young folks and kind of non-white voters, right? For the turnout, because you know, frankly, I've talked with enough people like my age, right? Kind of my peers and things like this. And to hear them talk about this election, it has got me scared. Right, because and you go a little bit old, you go older than me, and then they just want to go back to everything. They're just, you know, find it's distaste with Trump. You have my generation, like you have a lot of folks out there who I've been speaking to, and they're just kind of like, oh yeah, there's no good candidates, which blows my mind, right?
Yeah, that just showed like, and for people who are politically astute, and to say that there are no good candidates is a horrible cop out.
Yep,
I mean like it. I mean, if that's the point, then just get your head out of your ass, because there's two really good candidates in Warren and Sanders out there. And if you're saying there's no good candidates, then either you're buying into the apathetic bullshit that the media is creating or you're just not paying attention.
Yep.
And that, I mean, like, sorry, that's just how I feel.
No, I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right.
I mean, like, yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to say anymore, but
no, I think that's right. And those are the most, actually the most heated discussions I've had so far has been about around this issue, right? So but we shall see. Like I'm looking, frankly, at this point I just want to get the caucuses and get the primaries going, because I mean I think that's going to answer a lot of this bullshit, which would be really good. So the one person's candidate who I do think is done now is Yang. I think that his complete bumbling non-answers and general glosses on Medicare for All, the Sunday talk shows, that's going to sink him. Because not only, I mean, his one benefit has been that he's been someone who seems that he's genuinely concerned about people, right? And he's saying kind of what comes to his mind. It's like this freshness. And what came out of his mouth on the Sunday talk shows was like McKinsey, like talking points, right? It was this kind of corporate Dem kind of like non-speak about Medicare for All and in a fumbling way. Even the way that the guy doing the interview, I forget the guy's name. He was like, he was sitting in for the main guy. But Yang just was kind of fell on a sword a little bit there. So we'll see.
And Marianne laid off her whole entire staff.
Oh, she's still in? She didn't declare she's out yet?
She did now.
No, she did now, I guess, yeah. And we should say Julian Castro. Castro did step out. Did step out of the race. But so there's that there. The other big news just happened, I mean, last night, right? The Trump and his admin killed a notorious Iranian general. I hope I don't butcher his name too much. Qasem Soleimani. And it was a drone strike inside Iraq. So this is an Iranian general, right? And let's be clear, not a nice guy, right? Who's actually led these elite forces and has a pretty brutal reputation. So this is not about saying, oh, here's this good guy that was killed.
You know what I don't get? What? I mean, like, we talk about our generals and we talk about our soldiers as if that they are like flawless,
right?
I mean, like, no, like, these are people who are responsible for killing half right. million people in Iraq. Our people are not flawless. Like, no. Our people are not like to be put on pedestals. And yeah, like, I mean, like, I hate seeing this, like, these qualifiers out there. While Soleimani was a bad man, yeah, no, he was a bad man, but you know what, that's an act of war. We shouldn't be taking out someone's number two. Period. I don't care if they were a bad man or not. Like, I mean, like,
that's
imagine
the point.
If,
exactly. Exactly. Go ahead. Sorry.
Like, imagine if someone decided to drop a bomb on Pence in retaliation. Like, imagine what that, how that would cause. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You intentionally murdered, you extrajudicially, like, you killed a military leader, a very powerful military leader, who was the country's number two.
You assassinated him.
Yeah, you assassinated a public official.
Right.
Like, that is an act of war. That is against the Geneva Conventions, I am sure. Like, assassinating political leaders is a war crime.
Well, not only, okay, assassinating this general.
You're not like one, you assassinated.
And basically doing it inside another nation.
A sovereign nation.
Right. Without their permission, as far as we know. I mean, for what's come out so far. So there was no permission. And that's like saying, okay, yeah, we just can go violate anybody's airspace and kind of take out people in retaliation, kind of willy-nilly. And I was listening to this. There was a general, former advisor in the Pentagon or something like that, was on NPR this morning, just justifying this. Right. Yep. This is a justifiable preemptive attack and things like that. I'm like, under what rules? Right. Certainly not under Geneva Convention rules. Certainly not under international rules. I mean, this is like, I don't even know when they're talking about this is a justified attack. I'm like, justified by whom? Under what terms? And they don't say that, of course, because it's not right. This is just like the extension of the war on terror where this, you know,
this is the expansion of empire. Like, we can go in and just assassinate your leaders.
Right. Exactly. And there's nothing you can do about it.
And and there's nothing we can do about it. But, like, there's stuff that they can do about it. Like, starting out in all that war with Israel.
Yep.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you are goading them into a retaliation so you can start a larger conflict.
Right.
In that region.
Yeah, and not to mention, right, you basically have bolstered all, like, any kind of, like, terrorist group.
You have destroyed.
To basically say,
and you have just destroyed any prospects in the future of reinstating the Iran nuclear deal.
Yep.
No, I mean, like, yeah.
So that's just pretty scary. I mean, and we'll see where this goes. This is I don't like the way this is going. So we'll see. But that's just something that just happened. And this is a little taste, I think, of what we're in for over the next several months.
I feel like this is just to bolster his approval ratings.
Well, and that's it.
Deflect,
you know,
deflect people away from the disastrous impeachment talks that's happening. I mean, I think it's pretty clear, like, Rasmussen came out with a poll last week, like within a month's time, within a Rasmussen poll, his approval rating dropped 15%.
Yep.
I mean, that's bad news if you have that much of a drop in Rasmussen, like, to where, like, you disapprove, the majority disapproves with you.
Yep.
Because Rasmussen's a very friendly Republican-leaning poll. And it's like, I mean, yeah, I mean, like, wars boost up the poll numbers.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but I think, like, you know, this is where, you know, the weird world, you know, I think Sam Cedar had a good word for it. He basically called it war hawk virtual signaling. Right. You know, and that's the kind of, like, I think that's what the whole idea here is, except with the consequence of actually killing real people. Right. And this is not good. So, and then you pair that with what Congress just did this past week, which, you know, with no fanfare, is like, you know, they have a screening process for kind of new military recruits. And they basically just removed the term white nationalist from the screening process. So, you know, take that for what you will. But that's troubling, if you ask me. Right. I mean, there was some, you know, again, when I was in Syracuse back in the day, there was a group that used to come down from a group of skinheads, right? That used to come down from Fort Bragg, right? They were kind of enlisted. They were up in Fort Bragg doing training and things like this. And they used to come down, you know, with their military uniforms on, right? Or sometimes they come down with their, you know, with their skinhead gear and things, and with, like, Nazi armbands and stuff, right? And this one guy in particular, God, I wish I could remember his name now. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But he actually got in the first Iraq War. All right. He actually got his picture in the paper because he was in a tank battalion, and he got a picture from over in Iraq. right? And he was standing out, like, you know, at the top of the tank as the tank was driving by, and he was kind of standing up outside the tank, out the hole of the tank, the hatch of the tank, sorry. And on the side of his helmet was a swastika, right? So there's always been a contingent within the kind of military that's kind of been that stuff. But the military has been, especially with the rise of the white nationalism, has been very active in trying to get those people the hell out, right? And stuff like that. For now, to take that out of the recruiting stuff is that you're basically saying, I mean, the reason why they put it in there is they want to make sure that the military is not actively recruiting white nationalists, right? If a white nationalist gets in there, they're not doing it because they didn't screen for it. They've somehow gotten around it. This way, they're taking the term out entirely. And that's deeply, deeply problematic, but we shall see. Other thing I want to mention is that, you know, again, what's happening in Australia right now, this is our climate future. I don't want to get too much into a downer today on this one, but, it's horrifying. The fires in Australia. And if you look at the fire chart of the entire country, there are fires everywhere. And yes, Australia has fires. Yes, it's dry. Yes, it's hot. But all the officials there are saying, no, this is the hottest it's ever been. The driest droughts have been extensive. And now they can't get control of these wildfires. I was watching something last night of people driving through some of these areas that are on fire. And it's like literally going through tunnels of fire. It's horrifying. So this is where, you know, Greta needs to be at the front of our minds going forward. Last thing I want to mention for the first front half is Michael Moore's got a new podcast. It's called Rumble. It's actually, they kind of rolled it out as kind of, you know, hey, we're doing this thing and we're going to see before we do the official launch. We're just going to start doing some shows just to kind of get in, you know, figure it out, see how we want it to go. And within a couple of days, the thing went to the top of the podcast charts, not just like the news and politics ones, but all of them. It's a really good show. And the whole idea that of the podcast is to be how it's set up is kind of to be kind of more of a conversational space. Like I almost think about it. He's in the back of my mind. I keep on thinking he's got like these fireside talks things going on in his head. Right. Building connections and community and kind of being a space where you kind of like gather strength. And yes, to have some interviews and things, but it's kind of talking about how important it is that kind of that we work and organize together and finding ways to being together and to be in support of each other and not just the kind of like strict political ways, but in, you know, in kind of everyday ways. And it's a really cool podcast. And he basically said this in the podcast where any money that he got from the Trump tax breaks, he's taking all that money and sink it into organizations to defeat Trump. So that's pretty cool. So check out it's called Rumble. Michael Moore's podcast is called Rumble. Check it out. I think you'll dig it. They're supposed to be rolling out a website and other things there too as well. But just wanted to mention that since I've been listening to it. The New Year's Eve one was particularly good. So check it out. Cool. Yeah. Anything else for up front, Sean?
No, nothing really.
All right, so we're going to, without further ado, we're going to go for a little break. Sean was going to check out his box, and then we'll come back and talk about what's going to happen right here in Pennsylvania. Want to remind everybody that you become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a member today.
Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day the trial against labor leader Tom Mooney began. Mooney stood accused of detonating a bomb at the Preparedness Day parade in San Francisco on July 22, 1916. The military parade was meant to demonstrate U.S. preparedness to enter World War I. Many labor leaders objected to the idea of the United States becoming involved in the war. The bomb in San Francisco killed 10 spectators and injured 40 others. District Attorney Charles Fickert soon charged Mooney, his wife Rena, and his assistant Warren Billing with the crime. Mooney, born in Chicago, was the son of a coal miner. He became an iron molder at the age of 14, where he joined the union. Known for his socialist politics, Mooney was involved in a long, bitter strike against the Pacific Gas and Electric Company in 1913 that spanned well into 1914. He was accused of trying to use dynamite during that strike, but was acquitted. After the explosion at the San Francisco parade, Martin Swanson, a private detective with the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, pointed the district attorney toward Mooney. There was no evidence tying Billings or Mooney to the explosion. During the trial, some who testified against Mooney even admitted to committing perjury on the stand. Despite all of this, the men were convicted. Billings received life in prison, while Mooney was sentenced to hang. The trial garnered international outrage. President Woodrow Wilson set up a commission to study the case. Mooney's sentence was commuted to life in prison. For two decades, a fight was waged to release Mooney. Finally, the evidence of false testimony piled so high it could not be ignored. And in 1939, Billings and Mooney were released from prison. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. So we had our first welcome back segment, and now we're moving into the state of Pennsylvania. Sean, I got to say, you must be really psyched about the farm show this year.
Yes, but I probably won't be going.
What?
The farm show is nothing more than this yearly convention that puts out lies about how the farming industry is so big in Pennsylvania. Full stop. No, I'm joking.
You just made a lot of friends.
Yeah, I don't bother going to the farm show. I've been there once. When I moved out here, but every year that they have, I may actually have to go this year, but it's like $15 to park, so I don't know. But
you could practically ride a bike there, couldn't you?
Yeah, I don't have a bike there at the moment.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, my bad.
But no, like, so every year they have a big butter sculpture, and you know, different animals or different like things representing Pennsylvania. And I think it's like 400 pounds, 500 pounds of butter that's donated, or like 4,000 pouns of butter. It's donated from like Land O'Lakes for this thing. And this year they made a butter sculpture with Gritty.
With Gritty, wait!
Oh, Dad!
Oh, Dad! I heard that's how it really was yesterday at the farm show when it got released.
Really?
Yes. So like, what was actually funny, like Katie Meyer put a tweet out. Oh, we're here. The best yearly tradition for the news media is the release, like the revealing of the butter sculpture. So I quote tweet as like, Gritty or get the fuck out of here. And lo and behold, 30 minutes later, there's a Gritty sculpture there.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Yes. That's so awesome.
Yes.
That is awesome. So Gritty will be at the farm show, everybody. It's pretty crazy.
Don't know if that's really the target demographic.
What, butter sculpture?
a gritty butter sculpture at the farm show? But yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think, look, it's Pennsylvania. It'll go.
Yeah. I think it'll go for well.
As long as that is kind of like, you know, it's got a ring of Scrapple around the base, I think it'll be fine.
Have you ever now did you ever have Scrapple before coming to Pennsylvania or no?
No, I had Spam. Spam is all that we had. Spam, like the Spam in a can, right? And I used to take that backpacking, and we used to use that for instead of bacon, right? With backpacking. And I have to say, I like Spam. When I first moved to Pennsylvania, I was up in Allentown. I went to the Allentown, what do they call it up there? It was like a farmer's market or basically things to go up there, and they had Scrapple there. I was like, it can't be that literal, right? Is that really? It's like Scrapple? And it scared the crap out of me, so I didn't buy it. But you know, I've come around to know that Scrapple is part of Pennsylvania, and that it's not a strange thing here. So,
yes, no, Scrapple is definitely interesting.
Do you have a favorite Scrapple?
not really. Like I love going to a diner and getting Scrapple and eggs. Mm-hmm. Like, it is, it's amazing how regional it is, even in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Like, outside of Lehigh Valley, I would say, like, down towards, like, Lancaster, like, the Amish country in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Like, that you don't find Scrabble anywhere. Like, east of Lancaster and then, like, south of the Lehigh Valley, and that's it.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah. No, you, like, it is an extremely regional thing.
I didn't realize it was that, like, I thought there was, like, different versions in different areas, but it's like,
no, it's a very like southeastern, south central Pennsylvania thing, like where the Amish are at. So like, yeah, out here in Harrisburg there's no Amish, a lot of Mennonite, but like you see Scrapple. Yeah, no, there's Scrapple out here, like at the butcher's markets and stuff like that. It's very Pennsylvania Dutch. Mm-hmm. So whatever, there's a Pennsylvania Dutch population, like it'll be in that area, but other than that, no. So like NEPA or Western Pennsylvania? No, it's strictly like Lehigh Valley, Southeastern PA, and South Central.
Oh, there you go, man. There you go.
The geography of Scrapple.
Oh, God, the geography of Scrapple. There should be a map. There should be a map. Maybe do a meat map someday. That'd be funny. Well, speaking of mapping Pennsylvania.
Yeah, speaking of maps.
Yeah, Democrats in Central Pennsylvania are going up.
And speaking of geography in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So Shana Danielson will be running for the Pennsylvania Senate out here. She's going to be challenging Mike Regan, who's a very extremely conservative senator. This was a race 4 years ago that had no serious Democratic candidate, like, funded at all. And the only opposition to Mike Regan that, like, the unions and others ran in the establishment in this area was John Ritchie. Who's a brain dead NFL fullback, legit brain dead. Like this, and not surprising, Mike Regan won the seat. He offered very little resistance to Regan, and you know, we have Mike Regan in the office now. And this area has changed a lot in the past 4 years, especially like this district where Shana's at, even like the PA-10 Eugene, like. Scott Perry's district right now. So a couple of things to think about. The West Shore, Cumberland County went blue for the first time in 2016 or 2018 with voting for Governor Wolf. Mm-hmm. First time they've ever voted for a Democratic governor by county. It is one of the largest growing counties in the state. Like, imagine what Cumberland County is to what Montgomery County was 20 years ago. Mm. Like, that's where it's at. And Greg Rothman's district, which is 100% inside of Mike Regan's Senate district, is the fastest swinging red to blue district in all of Pennsylvania. So in Cumberland County, this is going to be a very tough pickup, but with Eugene at the top of the ticket and having him and having other good candidates stepping up and run, you may see some surprises in central Pennsylvania. Coming up this November. I feel like this year is probably the first year I've lived out here where there's a dearth of well-qualified candidates running for office. And not just the hanger-ons who've been running and losing for the past 20 years. Like, it's not the type of thing, like, who are we going to run against Scott Perry because it's an R20 district and no one's going to run.
Right, right.
Like, there are legitimate candidates stepping up for the first time. I think that, like, it feels like everyone has their act together out here in Central PA, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be – there's going to be some really good candidates getting through the primary process and challenging people like Regan, Rothman, Andrew Lewis. You might actually see some seats start flipping in Central Pennsylvania.
That'd be amazing. Well, I mean like we've talked about on the show. I mean, when you were covering like Jess King, right, out there, and Shana's run before, right?
House.
Right. She ran for House before, and now she's running for here. And she had a, you know, again, so what's also interesting, too, is that, you know, people like her, they're, you know, they've been active, right, in movements, right, but have also, this is not their, like, first shot at something, right? They've actually.
So, like, this is the second time Shana's running for office. Mm-hmm. The last time she ran, she pulled, like, 35 or 40% of the vote in a district where no one has ever ran before.
Exactly.
Like, and she also started Northern York County Democratic Club in this time as well. And I think she was helpful with getting that launched. And then she's also very involved with Moms Demand Action. But no, I mean, it goes to show you, like, when you have a good candidate running. So, like, there's America Votes crunched the numbers with Virginia in 2017. In seats that can typically went uncontested, Republican seats that went uncontested, when they put a name on the ballot, especially in the House races, that got an extra 500 votes for Northam. Mm-hmm. Like that. And they found out by just running someone on the ticket in places that no one usually ran, you're getting an extra 500 to 1,000 votes for someone, the person at the very top of your ticket.
Right.
Yeah. The people at the very top of your tickets. So, I mean, you look at it. I mean, that was last year was the first time I think it was like the high watermark for anyone to run for House office in Pennsylvania, especially for the Democratic side. They contest it like pretty much every seat. They need to flip 9 this year. And the House HDCC has a list of 50 seats that they're targeting. You know, they have tier 1 seats that they should flip. They have a whole bunch of tier 2 seats that are going to be hard flips. And there's going to be tier 3, which probably things they can't win, but they're going to run people in those seats to strategically drain them of resources. And
yeah, and the thing is about that too, as well, is that you never know, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's like even in the long shot ones, is that, you know, things happen in campaigns, right?
Oh, no, also things happen, like Terzai pulled hundreds of thousands of dollars away from other Republicans in the Southeast to make sure he won his race by 10 points mm-hmm. against Emily Skopoff.
Yep.
He fucking hates her with a burning passion. Like, he thought he was going to, like, so you're going to get to overreact, right? And also you have Greg Rothman, who's HRCC chair out here in central Pennsylvania. He's controlling the purse strings for the Republican Party. Normally you pick someone who's in a safe seat for that. He's going to have a legitimate challenger. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of race where you never know, because he's not liked.
Right.
And he's the type of person, another person who you find a good challenger against him in the swingest of, like, the largest swinging district in the state from red to blue. There's going to be a good candidate running against him. And, like, they're going to drain them of money. They're going to drain the Republicans of money, period. Because you're going to make him overreact. You're going to make them pull money from other races that they might lose, that there are toss-ups, or races that shouldn't be toss-ups, but they become a toss-up. So
right.
There's a lot of that that's going to be going on, too.
I'm excited. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm excited about what's going on in the state.
Yeah. No, we have a legitimate shot. I think we should absolutely flip the House.
Yeah, the Senate is uphill.
Senate's going to be a lot harder because of Judicek switching parties. But no, it's going to be awesome. Shannon's going to be running, and her launch party is next Thursday. And I will be photographing that for her.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Yep. So that's why I got the package in the mail today.
That's why Sean decided that he needed to be focused on the package.
It's my ADD.
Oh, my God.
No, I was at the gym this morning. I'm like running at 1,000 miles an hour. So, but
yeah. So no. Her launch party is next Thursday, you said, right?
7 to 9. At Buregs.
Buregs, yep. Or Buregs or Buregs Gathering Place, and that is 25 East Main Street, Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. I'll put a link to her event launch site. And, you know, look, you want to support a good candidate, too, as well, go to her site, right? Again, the link will be in here. Shannon Danielson for PA State Senate, and throw her some money, right? Help support her campaign. Choose your candidates, your local candidates, not just on the national scale, not just the presidential elections, but your local elections. Because I'll tell you, $50, $25 goes a long way, right, in a state race. And that means a heck of a lot. So get out there, support her. Don't, you know, if you can get out to her launch party, awesome. If you can't, throw her some money. Go to kind of Shannon Danielson for PA State Senate and throw her some money.
She's going to pay me somehow. I'm joking.
Sean, yeah. Like PayPal me, Sean Kitchen. Like that's her.
I'm definitely looking forward to this this year. This race is going to be awesome. I just signed up to circulate petitions, nominating petitions for DePasquale. So I'll be circulating petitions for Eugene next month. There's a lot more happening. I really don't want to talk about because people haven't made things public yet.
Yeah.
So, but no, like there's going to be a really good group of candidates are getting recruited out here in central Pennsylvania. And no, I mean, like, this is what the DC, we are the DC suburbs, pretty much, you know, like Northern Virginia, how that swung Virginia blue.
Yep.
Like central Pennsylvania, the seats in the immediate Harrisburg area, it's a handful, it's five or six, but those are going to be the ones that'll get you over the finish line and flipping the House or the Senate.
There you go, man.
And we absolutely need to flip the House this year to stop some bad shit from happening.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah, no, we flip the House, a whole lot of headaches go away instantly here in Pennsylvania. So.
Excited, man. I'm excited. So we got lots of stuff going on here. You know, keep the involvement up. And I'm actually feeling pretty kind of recharged and optimistic about 2020 at this point. Sean was expressing a lot of that optimism last fall. Saying like in Pennsylvania, you've been saying for a while now that there's a real shot in Pennsylvania. And I think now that I'm kind of out of a little bit of a funk, right? I mean, I can see that in a much, much kind of clearer eye. And the organizing that's happening on the ground is what's going to make the difference, right? I mean, people getting involved early and getting involved often, right, with this.
Yeah. No, and it's, you know, having strong – like, if you don't have a strong local grassroots organization, you know, you don't – or if you don't have – a strong local party or infrastructure in place, I mean, we're going to go through years of running the same people who are just a place on the ballot item, you know? And I feel like in central PA, we've finally crossed that like Rubicon where, you know, there's a lot of good organizing going on, especially on the grassroots level with Moms Demand Action, with the Indivisibles around here, where we're having actual legitimate candidates stepping up and looking to run for office. And it's, yeah, I'm very optimistic.
Why do casino players,
especially for the races out here locally?
Oops, sorry.
I mean, I feel like Eugene's going to be. I feel like Eugene's going to crush Scott Perry, and I think he's going to have some coattails with that. You know, if, especially with the money, it's going to be strategically targeting the PA-10. That money's also going to trickle into those other races. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you see $1 million getting dumped into Danielson Shanna's race.
Really?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if you see $1.5 million, $2 million.
Wow.
Man. I mean, no, there's going to be some insane money coming into the House or into the state next year. No. And it's happening right in my backyard, which is awesome.
Exactly. No, I mean, look, I mean, this is the kind of stuff.
I mean, this place was like a fucking ghost town 5 years ago when I moved out here.
Before I moved out here, this place was nothing. Look what I've done to this place.
No, I mean, but it's amazing. One, I can't believe I've been out here for 5 years already.
Yeah.
But two, it's like, dude, this place was a fucking ghost town, and it has been. And it's amazing seeing like how it's amazing being out here in a time where it's transforming.
Yep.
So,
aces, man, aces. So very cool. So, hey, anything else going on in Pennsylvania?
Nothing too much.
Excellent. So we will kind of move in today's last call. And just let you know, so after the break, we'll talk to you a little bit about where, you know, some of the things that I hope is going to happen with Raging Chicken in 2020. And as we get into our space news and to our beer news, as everybody. So stick around. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back right after this break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country, or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's our last call, where we do space news, beer news, and any other kind of fun stuff that we feel like talking to at the end of the show. And this one comes in our space news area. Sean was on the tip on this one, and he threw it into my space news ticker, right? That Amy Klobuchar, yes, Amy Klobuchar wants to, well, not 100%, but if she is elected president, right, she is kind of making some moves. Say SHIELD's going to declassify the UFO info. That is pretty good. I want to read you the whole quote, so we're not kind of like taking this out of things. This comes out of an interview with the Conway Daily Sun. It is a New Hampshire daily, right? And she was asked, right, about New Hampshire native David Frever, who's the former Navy pilot who first saw the now infamous Tic Tac UFO back in 2024. And I said, yeah, what do you do about that? And she says, look, I don't think we know enough. I don't know what's happened, not just with this sighting, but with others. And I think that one of the things that a president could do is to look into where they're in terms of what the science does say and what our military says. Here's the interesting part of that answer, that is some of the stuff is really old. So why can't you see if you can let some of that out for the public? So earnest journalists like you who are trying to get to the bottom of the truth would be able to see it. Dun, dun, dun. That's right. Klobuchar is on the release the UFO stuff. And as it turns out, both Bernie Sanders and Andrew Yang would also probably do the same thing. Bernie Sanders basically says if he finds evidence that there's aliens in the White House, he told Joe Rogan's podcast that he'd release it.
And Andrew Yang, actually one of the smartest things he has done.
To go on Joe Rogan?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
that is a, it's a weird crowd. It has a very alt-right tendencies, I would say, like leanings within it. Like, yep. I wouldn't say Rogan is, but like definitely the people he bring. I feel like he's been a lot better with bringing on outright progressives within the past couple of months, like balancing out his stuff, and he's responded to people that well. And it's important for someone to go on Rogan, who has just as big as a reach as Fox News probably, but with a different demographic.
Yep.
And that's where you win those votes over.
Right. And frankly, look, I mean, Joe Rogan,
I'm not saying like win over alt-right votes, but like, no, that's where your message of populism will resonate the most.
Right.
Now, look, within those realms of the internet.
Yeah. I think that like Joe Rogan is about getting Joe Rogan paid. Right. I mean, yeah. I really think that's what it, but he's got that kind of libertarian.
And he has one of the best.
What's that?
Yeah. I mean, he's very successful, one of the best probably podcasters out there, success-wise, like money-wise.
Right, exactly.
With what he's built.
I think that's what's really is driving. And, you know, he's moved more and more kind of like to some of the right-wing stuff, in part because that's where the money is, right? But he has brought people on. And the thing is, I can tell you, over the last several years in particular, I can't tell you the number of, say, students that have come that I've talked to just in discussing things, or it comes up in class, where their entryway into political engagement was Joe Rogan, right? And some of them went the libertarian way, right? And some of them kind of ended up going the Bernie way, right? So it's interesting to see what happens.
It's a very diverse crowd of people who listen to it.
Well, that's what I mean. I think that you got people that are searching for something, right? Searching for something, an explanation, and something that resonates. And so I think that's what that's been really kind of in part his niche. So for Bernie to go on there, right, is basically not kind of like handing off that crowd over to, you know, the libertarians and the alt-right.
And I also think that, like, for it. I also think it's a response to the Majority Report putting pressure on Rogan for stop having blatantly biased, a blatant bias, and start representing the other side. I mean, like,
no,
I guarantee
right.
you that when they go after, like, use their platform, that gets back to Rogan.
Oh, totally gets back to Rogan.
Yes. And I guarantee you, like, months of Cedar just ripping on Cedar and Brooks ripping on Rogan for you have to start cleaning up your shit because your crowd sucks and you have to start representing people fairly if you want to take yourself seriously. And I feel like to a degree he's responded to that. I have not listened to Rogan since. I have never listened to a full Rogan podcast, but on YouTube, like, that's where I'm stumbling across this stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, you get your kind of dietary workout hints from him, right? He's the health guy, right?
He's weird, but yeah. Like, yeah.
Sorry, the newsroom phone is ringing off the hook right now because it's we got down here in the Raging Chicken studio, things are going crazy. But so very, very cool. The other thing I just want to mention too, as well, just to bring this back because I've had some re-encouragement over the break about why I should continue to pursue my space news part of this podcast and why I should seriously get my ass in gear and actually start writing about it. Because now I've come across several different articles that are beginning to kind of point in this direction. And with 2020 is that there's, you know, this obviously governments are announcing plans and things like this. China is actually planning more than 40 space launches in 2020. And they're going hard for the moon, as well as making suggestions that they're going to start missions to Mars now, too, as well. Not manned missions to Mars, but more launches to the lunar surface. They are paving the way. They basically made these plans pretty straightforward for a permanent settlement on the moon. So that's going on. India has also basically said it's sending a second lunar lander. Their space game is kind of ticking up right now. And that's all happening in the wake of this budget getting passed here in the U.S., which included funding for the Space Force. And NASA is making a really big play right now to finally complete the SLS rocket system, right? To actually get the lunar, they call it the Lunar Gateway, which is basically the space station around the moon. Get that started, right? And actually get some settlements that are starting to happen on the lunar surface by putting in place, I forget the word they use for it, but they're basically sending stuff that will kind of be already on the moon. So when they finally get people down there, there's going to be habitats and that kind of stuff ready and set up through kind of robotic means and that kind of thing. So it's a pretty crazy time. Boeing just tested its capsule. It didn't work right. Right. It had a problem once it hit orbit. It was supposed to dock with the space station, but it did not. But they considered it a successful first test. So that's for a manned cruise ship. So things are kind of ramping up. And so you're going to hear more from me on this one. So I just want to put that in the mix since Trump loves to talk about China, that I thought we would do that. So before I get to beer news and to close out for here, so I want to just give you a kind of couple touchstones, which I've mentioned, and you've heard me talk about this in the podcast before, about some new things that we're going to be kind of pursuing here in the new year. And this is also yet another call for folks that if you're interested in getting involved with Raging Chicken, that drop me a line at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. That's ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. And tell me you might be interested in this kind of stuff, and maybe we can talk further. But I'm looking in particular to really building some relationships with movements on the ground, and also kind of expanding the kind of content that we do here at Raging Chicken. So I was telling Sean a little bit about this before the show today. Is like, so because Sean basically turned me on to the Menzingers, right? And if people have not listened to the Menzingers, you need to listen to the Menzingers, right? Because I went down a music hole, it's been a long time since I've gone down a music hole like that. So thank you, Sean.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Great band.
I mean, like, oh yeah. I mean, like, as soon as I am actually surprised I did not show you that America, You're Freaking Me Out video sooner.
Yeah.
Or track, just like the lyrics behind it. It's just awesome for like everything that's going wrong right now with the country.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. It's yeah,
exactly. It's great. It's awesome. And it's like, they're kind of got like the social distortion feel to them. And it's kind of like, you know, resonated with me and to anything. Anyways, that could put me on this music hole. And I've been wanting to do this for a while. And one thing I'm going to start doing over this break, I've got about 3 weeks before I go back to school for the spring semester. And I'm going to start working on this. I want to redo some of our intro music and some of our break music and that kind of thing. And I've been wanting to reach out to local musicians. There was a time which I put out a call for original songs that we wanted to highlight and that kind of stuff. But now I'm just going to be a little bit more aggressive and reach out to local musicians and bands. And I've got some in mind from the Lehigh Valley that I really like, that I think would be very fitting to kind of what we do here in the podcast. And their ethic is kind of very similar. So I started listening to that kind of stuff, and I said, you know what, I should be doing a little bit more of that too as well. So one of the things that I'm probably going to do on our Patreon site is that stuff will be free to members, right? When it's first released, and then after kind of like a couple of weeks, something like that, it'll be released to everybody else. But maybe doing some interviews with some of these some musicians from up in the Lehigh Valley and around the state. So if you've got suggestions of bands that we should talk to, again, raisingchickenpress@gmail.com, shoot me that. So that's good. In addition to that, we're talking to some folks in the Lehigh Valley, and anybody who's listened to this podcast knows that I've got my belief is that the Lehigh Valley is the future of Pennsylvania. And I think Sean would also put in a strong kind of play for the central Pennsylvania also being absolutely important, which I agree with. But Lehigh Valley is in terms of population center, in terms of growth, in terms of the mix, demographic mix, and in terms of the class mix, that is going to be an absolute critical part of the state. And we've seen, as part of these kind of off-year elections this past year, we saw a huge shift that happened there in the Allentown School Board and the county commissioners. Right? I mean, everything was like really, really cool. But so I've reached out to some folks up in Lehigh Valley, and I've got some folks that are definitely interested. So and I don't want to spill the beans until we've worked out the details of it, but it looks like I'm keeping my fingers crossed we're bringing on another writer that's going to be devoted to kind of what's going on in the Lehigh Valley, in particular what's happening on the left in Lehigh Valley, and then also some guest folks who are going to come on, ideally at least once a month, for as part of kind of like an additional part of the podcast, to do kind of like a roundtable of what's happening in Lehigh Valley podcast. I want to extend that too as well. We're going to start there in the Lehigh Valley because it's been my hobby horse for as long as I've kind of been in this area. And then we'll kind of grow from there. If we're successful on that and we get the kind of support that we need in order to sustain additional podcasts, then we're going to reach out to some folks in different regions around the state. And the key is going to be is that I am not going to be privileging, say, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, right, as part of this. The whole idea is to kind of extend out the kind of progressive network into areas of the state that are kind of underserved by this kind of media, and yet there's amazing stuff going on. So for example, Northeast PA, freaking awesome stuff going on up there. Need to get somebody kind of like get aboard this and build out this network. So that is a big plan for 2020. So more stuff on the kind of cultural music front. We're going to have some guest podcasts, and ideally we're going to get some additional writers on here, because I think, frankly, this is the time to build out this infrastructure as we're preparing. Like I said at the top, this is really the fight of our lives right now. I mean, both in terms of like policy stuff and local stuff in terms of happening in politics, but things like climate change. I mean, we got to be all in on this one. And so that's kind of where I'm at in this. And so, you know, again, if you can help out, if you can become a member, go to patreon.com/rcpress, become a member. So those $5 a month, and that will help out in this. And you're going to see us doing some more aggressive pushing for to building out that membership base, because we think that if we invest in this kind of infrastructure, that we can actually have an effect, right, on 2020 and beyond. Right. And that's the kind of goal here, is to build out this infrastructure. So. I don't know. So that's the kind of thing I'm thinking, Sean, going out for this. Quick stuff on Free Will. Free Will has got two releases tomorrow. That is Saturday, January 4th. They've got, I'll just kind of read you their description. The first is This Way to the Sorbet. It's a collaboration with Pottstown United Brewing Company. It is a hazy IPA with blackberry, raspberry, lemon, vanilla, and milk sugar. And their description says it's brewed using flaked oats and wheat with generous addition of Citra, Mosaic, and Lemon Drop hops before finishing fermentation atop the three fruit. That's, you know, what was that there? And fresh berry notes with a delicate lemon tartness rounded out by fruity hops and a touch of sweetness that comes in at 7.5 ABV. That will be available in 4-pack cans in both locations, in Perkasie and in Peddler's Village. They're also, the second debut that will be released tomorrow is Vergnügen, I think is how you say it. It is a pale lager brewed with a straightforward grist of Pilsner malt and flaked rice with subtle additions of Columbus and Liberty hops, then fermented cold for many weeks. Refined, familiar, and joyous, they say. And it's a sessionable kind of like hangout, have beer, that kind of stuff. It comes in at 4.2 ABV. And as I mentioned at the top, there's a special Monday event. They did this collaboration with these folks from Moosey BYOB. And it's Moosey BYOB is this guy, Ari Miller, who's a fairly well-known chef in Philadelphia. He's gone from successful restaurant to successful restaurant. They started up this little kind of like no-frills little shop or restaurant down there with amazing food once again. The folks from Free Will apparently connected to this guy. They love this guy and decided to do a little collaboration with it. Free Will has long – they've had a Pawpaw Sour that they've done in the past, and they really want to do more with Pawpaw because Pawpaw is like the one indigenous like Pennsylvania fruit. So they want to keep on, you know, doing stuff with Pennsylvania native pawpaw fruit. And so they did. They teamed up with this guy, and they're going to release Moosey, which is uses native pawpaw fruit and spruce tips. And they're going to be releasing only 143 bottles, and those are the 750 milliliter bottles. They'll be available for no limits, but you got to get to Moosey in Philly in order to get it. If there's anything left, it'll go to either the tap rooms. But it sounds really interesting. A barrel-aged Saison featuring Pennsylvania native pawpaw fruit and spruce tips sounds really cool. So the debut will be on Monday, January 6th from 5 to 8 p.m. in Philly at Moosey's famous Fritz Witz cheesesteak release. So if you want to click down, you want more information about that, about their event, you can click down there in our podcast notes for the day. So Sean, anything else? News and blues from around the area?
I got some personal news, I guess.
Personal news? Uh-oh.
Getting fitted for a suit tomorrow?
Uh-oh. Ruh-roh, Raggy. He's getting fitted for a suit. No, you know, not just going pulling something off the rack at JCPenney's here, folks.
Well, actually, so I actually have to go to... if I were to do like the separates and stuff like that, it would actually cost more.
Yes.
Because like of the way like my chest and waist sizes are, I guess they're only off by like four sizes.
See, Sean is like, built like a superhero, folks. He's got a little tiny waist. He's got big muscles up top.
I wish, but no, I'm off by like 10 inches between the two. And so it's just like, it would cost considerably more to get two separates pulled together and make a suit than to get a custom made. So
custom made. So like they're actually building it from scratch. Like you got a tailor from like Italy who's actually sending a bunch of fabric and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. He works at Men's Warehouse.
His name is Giuseppe. He works at Men's Warehouse. Yeah.
But and then I will be
in a suit.
Yeah, no, and I also want to do like have fun with this too, because it's gonna be a gray suit. I'm not gonna like, I hate black suits, like you can't really do too much. So I'm gonna get an oxblood belt and pair of shoes to go with it. So when I have to go to like really like just be super fucking pretentious when I have to go to some some events with my peers.
Oh my god. Are you gonna get a pair of oxblood Stacy's? Are you gonna get Stacy's?
We're Stacy's.
They're like the wingtip. Stacy Wings, a famous brand, is like wingtip shoes.
No, I'm not going with wingtips.
Tom Waits loves his Stacy's. So that's all I'm saying.
I'm not going with wingtips. I think wingtips is just a little too far for me.
Yeah, just no. Just that's what I'm trying to measure. I'm trying to measure how far out you're going. Is what I'm saying.
But No,
so,
I feel
you're just going straight up Doc Martens? Oxblood boots.
High tops.
Yes, exactly.
But it'll definitely be interesting. So that's like the one thing I wanted to get for Christmas. So pretty much got gift cards and all for that. So
awesome, able, man. Yeah. So you got that, and you got your train ride, right? So you got your train ride early for your own early Christmas present that you've been dying to have for the longest time, and now you're
I also got a sleep. Bottle. I got a bottle of McAllen's 12 double
Ooh,
cask.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yes. So.
Oh, I should have said this before. I got for Christmas. When I went up to see my folks up in New York. My dad and my stepmom, they were down here not too long ago for the Perksy tree lighting, and they picked some stuff up for me, and they basically went to Free Will and got a whole bunch of Ralphius and
one of Ella. Everything.
Oh my God. I was like, oh my God. They had a triple barrel aged Ella that I had last night. Right. And I was like, oh, that one was unbelievably good. And I've got two black currant Ellas that are still sitting up there that I'm not touching yet. Cause they're too good.
Nice. So I ended up getting some sour bottles from Forest and Maine. And so I got their Marius.
They sell they have bottles out of there?
Yes.
Oh.
So definitely worth going. They sell bottles in 4-packs.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really good to know, because I talked to my brother, Ryan, who like loves beer and things like this, and he says he doesn't like sour so much, but he's like, he knows enough about it. He's like, say, you know, I just don't think I've had a good sour. So next time I go up, I told him I'm going to bring him some stuff. So I'm going to bring him some things from Free Will. But at Forest and Maine, if they've got cans and bottles, I'll get some stuff for an
offer. So they'll have bottles. So like right now they have their Marius,
yeah.
which is their cherry sour they put out every year, mm-hmm. which is phenomenal. So I got a couple bottles of that. And then they did Ghost Marius. So what they did was they kept the dregs of the cherries inside the fermentation tanks, mm-hmm. made another batch of the Marius, aged it, and they aged it with plums.
Ooh.
So the Ghost Marius, the dregs of the cherries with a nice plum taste to it. And like when I was going there every time, like literally like this one bartender who used to be the sales rep at Victory, mm-hmm. like total like surfer stoner dude from like Matthew McConaughey movie, like Dazed and Confused, look just like that. Literally went there 4 nights in a row, like 3 nights in a row, and he popped open an unmarked bottle every time and was just handing people samples like left and right of this Ghost Marius. Oh, I'm like, yeah. Dude, he's like, do you want another one? I was like, I just bought 2 bottles. Like, no, here's a sample. I'm like, fuck. I mean, like, it's a good way to elicit tips out of me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, for sure. I know how to work the room.
Yeah. No, stuff I only wish I could do. Pizza boy, but I couldn't. But no, I mean, like he was just popping open sours. So like, no, their sours are really good. They like forage their own yeast every season. So like winter and spring, or fall and spring, they'll start making their own yeast, forage their own yeast and bacteria for the year.
Wow.
So. Yeah.
Hey, what was that? You remember that one? I remember the picture of it so distinctly. It was something from Forest of Maine that it was like almost like a cream yellow.
Was this from like years ago?
Yeah. I know. I'm asking a lot for you to remember.
I actually think
you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. So it was a beer called the Exogamy in Space.
Yes.
And we were talking about this at Forest Maine the other day. I brought that name up, and like two people turned their heads. Is like, man, I haven't heard that one in years. I'm like, that was like this. That was just a one off that they'll probably never do again. Mm-hmm. It was a IPA that they made it with like a farmhouse Brett yeast. That was just super, whatever, like funky. Hoppy, everything. It was awesome.
Yeah, I remember you were just raving about that thing, and I think that's the first time that you explained to me what Brett was. I don't know what that one is.
Yeah, but what's amazing about like that place is seeing them where they've gone from like the house. They now have the warehouse next door, mm-hmm. so that used to be like their closet space, mm-hmm. where they converted that into like a single open room. So they have like 7 big tanks in there, serving tanks. All their beers in the serving tanks. They don't keg their beer that much anymore, like for like on premise, mm-hmm. which is great to save like locations and all.
Yeah.
Like space. And their new space is really cool. Like it's like we were talking about like 7 years ago when we were first going there for the first like 3 or 4 years, like when you ordered a beer on hand pump, it came out
of the cellar, right?
At 70 degrees.
Yeah.
It was just sitting in a keg in someone in the basement of that building. Like, yeah, no, it was amazing. Like, yeah.
Very cool.
It was fun talking about like those old times. We were just like, now they're like a corporate business almost. But no, it's awesome seeing how they've blown up, because I mean, like they built their names in the shadows of Tired Hands. I mean, Tired Hands is good, but Tired Hands gets the hype because they're on the main line,
right?
And stuff like that. And a lot of people like talk about Tired Hands, but like my favorite place as far as the main. I like Tired Hands, but Forest Main's a lot better.
Well, and the whole area around there, the whole Ambler and stuff like that has blown up there too as well. I mean, that's like,
especially over the past 15 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like there was that. What else? It was interesting. The former state rep who was the in office before it got gerrymandered, mm-hmm. was a Democrat. His wife is now the mayor of Ambler.
Mm.
And so like, they're always up in the Capitol. So when I was like, oh yeah, they're from Ambler, I was like, dude, I go to Forest of Maine all the time when I'm home. And they just like, yes, we love that place.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
No, that's they're awesome. It's always fun going back and talking to them too.
Cool, cool. Well, hey, man. So I forgot to mention this. I forgot to mention this before the show, and I forgot to mention this at the beginning. So I will not be able to do next week's show.
Okay.
So next week I am going to be in Seattle. I'm going to be there for a conference, which I'm presenting a paper on as part of this panel on contingent faculty and kind of labor organizing and kind of support for contingent faculty. I'm basically talking about a campaign that we did at Kutztown to deal with a lack of office space for temporary faculty or adjunct faculty as a result of stuff, and how we had to push things to change dynamics, blah, blah, blah. But I'm on this panel. But you know Robert Seward?
I do not.
He's a steelworker organizer from out of Pittsburgh. He's got a bow tie. You've met him before. We've met him.
I think so. Yeah.
He's chairing the panel, so he's going to be out there. So it'd be pretty cool. So my hope is that for next week that I'm going to try to at least, if not everybody on that panel, I'll see if I can get takers for it to do some kind of short interviews with those folks. And so I'm going to try to post that up next week. Instead, I might not get it up until the following Monday once I get back. We'll see what the internet connection looks like and that kind of stuff and how the editing goes and that kind of thing. So, but that's one of the things you look forward to. I'm also going to put, like I said, I'm going to have the bonus track that I'll release later on today, which will be after the inauguration of Trump. That'll get put up here. And then next Friday, what I'm going to try to do for the regular time is to put up our first ever podcast. Which was a hoot to listen to, I have to say. So our first ever podcast, when we were still figuring out the technology and we were trying out SoundCloud, right? If you remember, SoundCloud is the first place where we did our podcast. So we're going to check that out. So look for that ahead of time. There'll be no lack of content going forward, but I just want to let everybody know we will not be doing a new show next Friday, except unless I get those interviews together and we'll pull something together. All right. Anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
That's everything.
All right. That is everything. All right, everybody. Happy New Year. Let's do this in 2020. Let's get rid of the Cheeto in the White House. Let's organize. Let's take on a kind of a progressive future. Let's stop climate change. And let's kind of show the future what it can be. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Remember, become a member. It was $5 a month. Whoa, 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 whoa. That's not what I wanted. Sorry, that just blew up in my face. Become a member for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress. Become a member for as little as $5 a month. Your membership will help us build this out. Until next week. Goodbye.